Welcome to episode 536 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by thedigitalmediazone.com. I'm Josh Pollard.
And I'm Richard Gunther. And this is the show that puts you in control of your favorite movies, music, shows, and games. And we have so much news because everybody is releasing product right now. Good grief.
Yeah. Hey, at least for your sake, it's not a bunch of next-gen game console stuff.
I am very happy about that. But before we get into that news, let's first hear from David. He sent us feedback at entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. And David asks, in the past week or so, Roku has added Dolby Vision and Atmos to its new streaming box. In addition, it added Peacock to its offerings. At $99 with a better remote, is this device and, you know, adding HBO Max far away from supplanting the Apple TV as the one set-top box to rule them all? That
David,
is a really good question.
Like, way to spoil the content for the rest of the show.
Yeah, I don't know that we can really answer this one yet. So a little bit of clarification there. I think the point being that right now it isn't yet supporting HBO Max. It is supporting Peacock because they did come to that agreement there.
Mm-hmm.
But we're still waiting on HBO Max. There's an HBO app. It's crap. It's awful. But that is available. But, I mean, we like Roku. Right? Roku is good. And certainly it's cheaper than the Apple TV, which comes in, I believe, at a starting point of $129. So
I thought it was like $179 or something.
I think that's the high-end one.
Oh, okay.
Well, actually, maybe the 4K version does cost. Yeah, I don't. It's been so long. I mean, yeah, it's been a while since I bought an Apple TV box. That feels kind of nice. I don't have to replace them all the time.
With how much they cost, you don't want to replace them all the time.
No, absolutely. Well, I'll tell you what. We are going to talk more about Roku, and we are going to talk about other devices as well. So I kind of want to hold on this and maybe let the news stories answer this question.
Maybe. Yeah. Okay. So literally just about every major video streaming device company announced new products in the last week. Except for Apple. Right. So we have new Rokus. We have a new thing from Google, which is a little bit harder to describe than just saying new Rokus, and new Amazon Fire TV devices. So it's a lot of new streaming boxes to cover. Yep. We're going to start with Roku. They probably have the most to cover here. And they go first because they're number one in streaming devices. And because we just happened to put it first in the order. So a few new devices. The main one, the one that we care the most about, the one that David cares the most about, is the Roku Ultra. It's got a new processor, so it's faster. It's supposed to launch channels 30% faster. The wireless chipset in it is supposed to give you 50% improved range. Fortunately, they still have an Ethernet jack. Like, guys, if you're streaming 4K video, just use a hardwired Ethernet cable. Always. Just do it. You'll thank me later. They added support for Bluetooth, which I don't know how big of a deal that actually is. Maybe for headphones or Bluetooth speakers.
I'm not. Yeah, my bet is that it is so that you can bring your own Bluetooth headphones. Previously, they had the thing where you could plug headphones into your remote.
Right.
That's kind of feeling dated these days since devices don't come with headphones that have headphone jacks on them.
Right.
When you buy every new phone or reader out there anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Since all of the top tier phones stopped providing headphone jacks, a lot of people don't have wired headphones anymore. But it always was a really cool feature. I thought that was one of the nicest things about Roku.
Yeah.
As David mentioned, it is getting Dolby Vision now. It's had HDR in the past, but it didn't have Dolby Vision. It's getting Dolby Atmos. And they're replacing the micro SD card slot with a USB 3 port. Now, I don't know much about the ability to expand storage on a Roku. And as far as I know, you can't like run Plex server or something like that on a Roku. Like, is there a reason you would want to slap a 4 terabyte USB hard drive on a Roku that you know of?
Not that I'm aware of, but that potentially opens the door for developers to write a product that would allow you to store content. So, you know, maybe, for example, you could have, I don't know, like PlayOn Cloud here, where you could download something from PlayOn Cloud and keep it on your Roku.
Yeah, that'd be cool. Or a Plex server or a channel server or, you know, any of that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, that's a whole lot more entailed. I don't know enough about this processor to know if it would be able to support that sort of thing.
Right. Yeah, that does require a little more horsepower.
Also games. Like, you know, just for downloading games, maybe they're anticipating that you could get bigger games.
Right. Yeah, that's true. I mean, the Apple TV has 2 storage level options, right? Those are the main differences between the...
Right.
Yeah. And that's wise for games. So I kind of always forget about games on these devices because I would use an Xbox for that.
Right. Because why? But the why is because $99, right? That's the
exactly.
Why.
Yeah. Yeah. So $99 is the cost. That's the price the Roku Ultra, I think, has always been. And this new version will be out in mid-October. Not an actual date, just mid-October. So within the next couple of weeks.
And don't be disheartened. You can still plug your headphones into the side of the remote if you want to. It will support that. But you have other options now.
Right. Yeah, because wireless. You should always use wireless headphones. Then your cats don't chew them up.
Unless you're on a podcast, then don't use wireless headphones.
Right. Right. Wireless for your headphones, not for your internet. That's the important thing to remember here. Okay. All right. So they also released a new soundbar. And they've had a soundbar. They introduced one last year, I think it was. It was a bigger one. This one is a smaller one. In fact, it's about the size of a carton of eggs. It's kind of a weird size for a soundbar. But, you know, so it's a smaller soundbar with a 4K Roku built in. They don't say that it's the same as like a Roku Ultra. So we're probably not talking about the same level of performance and specs as the Ultra, but it will right. still give you 4K video. And this soundbar is $129. That's $50 less than the bigger one and only $70 more than the regular Roku 4K. Like, that's a pretty sweet deal.
Yeah, that's a crazy sweet deal. You know, I am really curious to see, well, not see, but hear what this sounds like. They don't give a whole lot of specs in terms of, you know, what sort of surround you're going to get out of it and how it's, you know, how many speakers it has and or anything like that. But if this is decent, I mean, for a bedroom TV, this is a no-brainer. Get this. Don't get the stick.
Right. Yeah. And because it's so small, like, you're not putting this in your living room, but you could be putting this in a bedroom, or maybe you've got a TV in the kitchen. And my guess would be, like, with speakers that size, you're probably talking about similar audio performance to like a Google or an Echo type speaker or something like that. It's not going to blow your mind, but it's still going to be miles better than the speakers in your TV, which are pointed at the wall instead of at you.
Right. Right.
So that's the Roku Stream Bar, also available in mid-October for about $130. Now, one of the other announcements here is that Roku, like it seems like every other smart TV out there now, is getting AirPlay 2 and HomeKit to some of their 4K Roku TVs and devices later this year. There's a lot of ambiguity in this headline. Select TVs and devices later this year.
Yeah.
So we don't know what it is. We don't know what devices it's coming to or when.
Right.
We know that AirPlay 2 is just the ability to stream from your iPhone, your iPad, your Mac to a TV. What does HomeKit coming to a Roku mean?
Yeah, that's an interesting question because you might wonder, well, why would I want that? Does that give me the ability to like basically have a HomeKit hub in this television? No, that's not what this does. What that does is it brings the TV into your HomeKit control experience. And that is more useful than you might think it is. It allows you to do things like control the input or control the volume or potentially be able to use the television's power status as something to trigger other things in your smart home. I turn on the TV, I want the lights to come on and
or off.
I turn off the TV, I want the lights to go off. I turn on the TV after 8 p.m., I want the lights to go on dim. So there's a lot that you can do there. I switch to a certain input, I want certain lights to be on. There's a whole lot of really powerful automation you can do from that. And in fact, using Homebridge, I have LG, my LG TV, my old LG TV that is never going to get HomeKit or AirPlay 2 support, now integrated into my home environment. And I do that very thing with the lights. It works great. Now, the other thing is that by adding this, this answers kind of a longstanding question that folks had. Would Roku, which already has its own environment in TVs, like it already has the ability to stream stuff from Roku, I believe you can cast to Roku devices, and there's an app that you could use to share stuff. Would they actually incorporate these other capabilities that Apple was adding onto all these other device manufacturers? Because remember, they weren't included in the initial lineup of AirPlay and HomeKit vendors from way back at CES a year and a half ago, when this stuff came out. So the answer is that yes, now they're going to do it. But like you said, we don't know what devices, we don't know when, just later this year.
Mm-hmm. Right. And with these new devices also comes a bump to the operating system. We're now looking at Roku OS 9.4. Apparently some of that channel launching performance that we mentioned with the Roku Ultra, maybe some of that is also attributed to the operating system tweaks. Either way, no one's going to complain about those apps and channels loading faster. They've added the ability to put themes on your Roku so that it can look different. I think the nice little touch here is that it's not just visual themes. It'll also change the sound effects. So yeah, that could be a lot of fun.
And I think that's probably the biggest change there, because you can select from existing themes on Roku devices today. It's just kind of limited.
Mm-hmm. Right. And then the live TV channel guide that we saw released earlier on some of their TVs back in July, it's now basically just getting built right into the OS so that it should be available on most things. But this still feels like something that's really only for TVs because, maybe not. So for TVs, it made sense because TVs have an over-the-air tuner built in, but they're also adding the ability to add streaming channels into this guide. And it's totally configurable what channels you want in there. So there you go. Grid guide on your Roku for your over-the-air and your streaming channels. I think that covers everything for Roku. Now let's talk about this new device from Google.
Yeah, this is, I am so happy to see this, and I'll explain how happy I am in just a little bit, but Google has finally dealt with the biggest issue that I've always had with Chromecast. I think Chromecast is an incredibly clever product, allowing you to sling content to your TV without actually really sending it. What you're sending it is an address, and then it goes and it finds the content and plays it back. In most cases, sometimes it will actually take the content from your device. But that means that you're having to use your device to control it. And I hate that. I don't want to have to use a device.
We've always hated this. Like, that has always been the thing that we disliked about Chromecast.
Right, exactly. Well, they basically fixed it by marrying Google TV and Chromecast into one device. So Chromecast, still available as it exists, $30. But for $50, now you can get a dongle that also includes Google TV. And it is the all-new Google TV experience, completely redesigned. No more are you focusing on apps. We've come a long way from the old, I don't even know what it was called, the Logitech Review or something, the thing that...
Oh my gosh. Right? That it remote.
Now, you know, they finally realized apps are confusing to general consumers when they're just trying to find content. So we've talked about how they were redesigning it. We now have some, firsthand exposure to it through videos and demos that they did during their launch today. And it looks nice. It looks a lot like what others are doing. So add Google to the list of companies that are the list of companies that now curate content for your TV. They offer a universal search. They offer recommendations based on everything that you watch across all of your different applications. They offer a watch list so that you can keep track of things that you want to watch. They keep track of the things that you have watched so that you can jump back into them. So all of that stuff that these other vendors like Apple and Roku and TiVo and others are doing. And all of the specs you'd want to see. It's 4K, Dolby Vision, HDR10, HDR10+, Dolby Audio, including Atmos, has live TV through YouTube TV. You could use Sling on it, but I don't believe that that's integrated into the live TV experience that they have built on board. So
it probably works with the HD Home Run also, because the current Android TV operating system, which this is built on, has a... They might call it Channels also, app that does support TV tuners, and it does support the HD Home Run.
Interesting. So it'll be interesting to see if that would be integrated into the general live TV section, because live TV is one of the major headings that you can switch between now. So I'll want to see more about that, and I'll get a chance to see more about that soon enough, because I have pre-ordered one. You can buy them now for $50. They're available in October. They also have a deal where you can buy one for $90, bundled with 6 months of Netflix's $12.95 a month service. Now, if you do the math on that, that's $78. And if you're already a Netflix subscriber, you qualify for this, whether you have Netflix or not. That means $12 is what you're paying for your new Google Chromecast with Google TV on it.
But that's not the top tier Netflix that gets you 4K.
No, it's not. But you can apply the same discount to any tier.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's really nice.
Yeah. Now, we mentioned the remote. The remote's a nice, small little remote down to just the core buttons. It has voice control, so you can use Google to find stuff. It has a D-pad. It has mute and volume buttons. And I believe just Netflix and YouTube as predefined services that you can go to if you want to. So
that's correct.
Overall, I think that they've done a really good job with this. I'm looking forward to trying it.
Yeah, I'm really impressed. I'm really excited about this device. And I keep waffling back and forth on whether I want this, because I've been thinking of getting a Chromecast, like, almost just for when we do travel, which a lot of people use a Chromecast for, that just to be able to plug into a hotel TV or whatever.
Right.
But the Netflix deal is awesome. But the reason that I'm like, I don't know, is I've already got an NVIDIA Shield TV. I've already got a TiVo Stream 4K. My TV has Chromecast. Like, I don't really need this, but it does sound really good. And that Netflix deal, that might be reason enough to just go ahead and get this.
Yeah, that's what put me over. When I saw that, I'm like, that's insane. Of course I'm going to do that. That's just nuts. So you mentioned the TiVo stream. And when Jared posted about this, as soon as the embargo was lifted on these devices, I posited the question to him. So Google Chromecast versus TiVo stream, why would you buy one over the other? And he gave me a whole list of reasons. And there were a couple in there that really caught my attention. One is that, well, one might just be the longevity of Google supporting this. And, you know, we don't really know what's going to happen with TiVo Stream. It is supposedly their next generation of stuff, but TiVo's just been such a weird company in terms of providing information on what their roadmap is these days. So that's one thing. Another is that they're curating content across what I think is a broader set of services. So you have this kind of one-shot universal search across everything. And it's not trying to mix it with, you know, sometimes you're searching TiVo, sometimes you're searching Google. It's just all one thing. It's all through Google. And it's native. You're not having to launch some app to get to it. It is your operating system. Now, in theory, maybe the TiVo stream gets this new version of Google TV at some point. That ought to be interesting. Like, what does that do to that device?
Right.
So, you know, I think there's a lot of unknowns here. One other really cool feature that is worth mentioning before we move off of this is that Google search results for movies and TV and stuff like that are going to have the ability to basically throw them into your watch list. I don't know, maybe they already do this, but you'll be able to find something through a Google search. It comes up as a TV show or a movie or whatever, and they're just going to be an icon there, add to watch list. So you do that, and it's just going to show up on your device to watch later. None of this stuff where you have to, oh, I have to remember to add that to my TiVo, or I have to remember to look that up on my Roku. This is so smart. And of course, of these players, only Google has the infrastructure to do that.
Right, right. So I do love all of the recommendation stuff. That can be incredibly useful for finding new things to watch. But these devices are hooked up to TVs that are used by everybody in the family. And things that I want recommendations for are not the things that my kids want recommendations for. They're not even the things that my wife wants recommendations for.
Right.
Did they talk about any potential solution to that? Like, I mean, obviously Netflix as an app has user profiles, but does Google TV have user profiles?
Unless I slept through that part of the presentation, I don't believe that they're providing any solution for that. But I mean, you know, this is a huge step forward for Google TV.
It absolutely
is. Huge step forward. So I could see them adding that capability at some point in the future. It's not like they don't already do that sort of thing with other products already, right? Like, they know how to manage accounts.
Right. And they've got Google Voice Match. So if we use our voice, they know who's talking. And by they, I mean Google devices.
Right. So that would be interesting, right? Show me my recommendations. And
right.
It knows who you are. Like, they didn't talk about anything like that, but that would be amazing. I would love that. And I hope that we see something like that someday.
Yeah, that would be really cool. So the other thing that I wanted to chat just briefly about was the price of these devices compared to the TiVo Stream 4K also, because this is $50. The TiVo Stream 4K, they had called it an introductory price of $50. It's not an introductory price anymore. It's just the price. It's $50. It's the same cost. But and the Roku 4K is $50. The Amazon Fire devices, I think, are $40. Their 5K one is, or their 4K one is also $50. But you have to assume that Amazon and Roku and Google, like, in just straight up hardware and software cost and all that stuff, they're probably losing money on these things, but they're subsidized through all of their advertising deals and all of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And TiVo, yeah, they've got some ads, but they can't subsidize a TiVo Stream 4K the way Google and Roku and Amazon can.
Maybe not. I'm not entirely convinced of that. I mean, maybe they haven't done it yet. Certainly, TiVo is good at prioritizing making revenue off of advertising over the convenience and experience of its customers. So I'm not entirely convinced that they wouldn't try something like that. And they already have Netflix and I forget what other button on the remote for the TiVo Stream. So they're getting some money from that.
Just Netflix.
Just Netflix. Okay. Well, I mean, you know, I'm not convinced that that's that big of a problem, really.
Okay. Now, I mean, for TiVo's sake, I hope it's not.
You might argue that all of those other companies that you mentioned are in a better position to have a loss leader product.
Mm-hmm.
Right? For Amazon and Google, these are very likely loss leader products. For Roku, this is their business, but they have spent the last however many 15 years or so honing that business down to a science. TiVo has been spending the last 15 years selling themselves off to different companies.
But Roku's business is also ads. They make money on all of the ads that are shown in those apps.
Right, right. Which I like, hey, kudos to their partner negotiators that managed to pull that one off.
Yeah, exactly. That's impressive. Some impressive deal making. But when you're the number one streaming device, like you've got the power to kind of push people into those types of deals.
Right.
Okay, so two more devices to talk about, this time from Amazon. This is kind of the least exciting, least interesting stuff here. Amazon announced two new Fire TV devices and a new interface. I'm not going to talk about the interface at all. Richard would be better to cover that if he wanted to. But basically, two new devices, neither of them are 4K. They're just called the Fire TV Stick and the Fire TV Stick Lite. So I think I've lost track of how many different Fire TV devices there are now.
Oh, man. So many.
Because there's also the 4K. Yeah. They've got the Cube. You probably don't need to count the recast.
That's the point here is this is just a stick, not a stick 4K, just a stick. It does HD content with HDR and Atmos, which is kind of interesting because you don't even really think of HDR and Atmos when you're thinking HD content. You usually associate that with 4K content.
Right. But there's no reason it can't be in there. So
right. Right.
That's cool, I guess.
Yeah.
And so that version of the Fire TV Stick is $39.99. And then the Fire TV Stick Lite is $29.99. It sounds like same processor and all that stuff. The only real difference is the remote. And on the Lite, the remote doesn't have volume buttons or TV power buttons.
That is my understanding as well. Why they name the Stick the Lite. I don't get it. They've done this in the past where they had two different versions of the same box with different remotes. So that's not uncommon for Amazon.
Even Roku has done that.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's true. So these are good. They're good updates, good additions to the line. You can see that the primary reason for doing this is to compete with Roku, which is the leader in the lowest priced devices that you can get for streaming. You know, they're the ones that have I think you can get a device for like $25 at Walmart, right? So it's just, and they make a device specifically just for Walmart.
Right.
So, you know, they have, like I said, they have this down to a science. Now you mentioned the new interface. I'm not really terribly excited about the new interface. And as you know, I know a lot of people hate the Amazon experience that is largely driven to drive you to buy or rent Amazon content. I don't really care about that all that much. I think the interface is laid out well. If they don't fix the problem that you have to do two completely different lookups for a UHD and a regular version of
yes.
the same program in this interface, then as far as I'm concerned, it's still broken.
Yeah, and that doesn't apply to these devices since they're not 4K, but for everything else they have that supports 4K, it is bananas.
Right.
That you have to look for shows separately based on the resolution. Come
and
on.
And that it doesn't just prioritize them because
right.
that's what you have.
Yeah. If I'm on a 4K device with a 4K TV, why would I want to watch it in 1080p?
Right.
Don't show it to me. Come yeah. on.
It's nuts.
It reminds me of 10 years ago, filtering out all the standard definition channels from my Windows Media Center guide.
Right, right.
Don't want to watch that crap. All right, let's move on to some audio news quickly. A couple of new features coming to YouTube Music. We don't know exactly when, because both of these are just things that they appear to be slowly rolling out, slowly testing with people. The first one is they basically straight up are copying the way that Spotify does their daily mix playlist. So on YouTube Music, it's called My Mix. It'll give you just one big mix that mixes all sorts of genres of music, or they'll give you up to seven different daily mixes that are just numbered. And like Spotify, they're basically divided up by genres. So if you listen to country music and rap, let me pick two that are the least likely to be in your collection together, then maybe daily mix one is rap and daily mix two is country and daily mix three is pop, you know, that sort of thing. So it's not available to everybody yet, but it's coming. And I mean, there's no reason to think that they're not going to do a good job with this. They're YouTube. They know people's viewing preferences. So I have to imagine they're going to do it pretty much as well as Spotify does it. So it'll be a nice feature to have. I use this all the time on Spotify. The other thing that they're adding is some filters that show up right at the top of the app that they kind of break music down into four different categories: workout, focus, relax, and commute. Now, workout and focus, I can kind of figure out what kind of music falls into that. Relax seems real similar to focus. I mean, maybe the only difference between those two is one has lyrics and the other doesn't. I'm not sure. And I have no idea what commute is. Like, everybody wants to listen to different things on their commute. But this also essentially breaks down into categories similar to those My Mixes, where you would get a workout super mix, which is, you know, all sorts of genres, and then workout mix one, workout mix two, workout mix three, that are split out by genres. So cool stuff. I'm not sure that it's like important enough to be like the top level thing within the app, but for some people it is. Now, again, both of these are in testing basically, and maybe the test come back on that design decision being not a great one and it gets changed up a little bit. But as a categorization of music, these are popular categories that people are looking for in their music apps. So that does make sense. They just, I think, probably need to figure out a better way of surfacing this within the app.
Yeah. Yeah. I would agree with that, but it's cool. It's
yeah. Cool.
All right, well, where are you going to listen to your YouTube music? Maybe on your Google speaker. And in Google's announcements this week, they announced a new Nest Audio speaker. So it's a speaker. It's called Google Nest Audio. By the way, just in case you're confused about this, this is in fact a Google Nest Home device. So, just like your Google Home, sorry, your Google Nest Mini and your Google Nest Max, Google Nest Audio is a Google Home device. It has the Google Assistant baked in. The idea here is that it's bigger than your Mini. It's probably ultimately the replacement for the old, I don't know, Airwick shaped device that they released years and years ago. It's $99. It comes in a couple different colors. They had some musicians talking about it on the announcement to just talk about how wonderful it sounds, which is great. And I think the most important thing here, and I don't know, maybe you could already do this, but they demonstrated this thing where you could tell your Google Assistant that you wanted to move what you were listening to a different room, and it switched the location for you. Holy crap, that's cool. I love that. I hope we get to a day where I don't have to say it. I hope we get to a day where I can set preferences and the music will just follow me where I go.
That would be cool. That would be really cool.
That would be
so
cool.
I never thought we would see the day when Google became worse at naming things than Microsoft.
Yeah. Yeah, they're really bad. Really
bad.
Oh
my gosh. So
almost
bad.
Almost followed up shortly thereafter by Amazon. And they too released some smart speakers this week, or announced them anyway. They're not going to be available until October or November, depending on which ones you want. But there's a new Echo. There's a new Echo Dot. Those, what do they remind you of? Come on, Josh, what do they remind you of?
The Echo Dots?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
The Q.
Oh.
They're spheres.
They do.
They're spheres that look like an orb with a glowing light at the bottom.
Yeah, the Nexus Q is what it was called, right?
Yep. Yes,
nice
indeed.
Callback to like 2011 or something like that.
I just remember James loved it.
He was like the only one who loved it.
Loved it. Well, you know, he's into all things Google. So,
oh man, that device made no sense at all.
These are bigger than the old Echo devices, so they have bigger speakers. They're supposed to sound a lot better. They have processors that allow them to process audio locally, recognize you, and respond to you faster. So all good stuff. But I really want to see how they fare in terms of audio quality. They have some really adorable new kids edition versions. One looks like a panda, one looks like a tiger, and a really odd looking new Echo Show that kind of looks like the Echo Studio, which, if you remember, looks like a growth stunted HomePod with a tablet smacked onto the side of it.
It's
and
weird.
Supposedly it has amazing sound, but obviously we haven't had an opportunity to listen to any of these things. But hey, you know, lots of new speakers from these product ecosystems. I am in both of these. I will definitely get a new Dot. I'm not going to do anything until Prime Day because I'm expecting they will very likely go on sale lower than the current prices.
But right.
I plan to order an Echo Dot and replace one of the Dots that I already have. I don't really have an immediate need to get the Nest Audio. My Mini serves me well. My Nest, whatever it's called, on the side of my bedstand works really well. I don't plan on replacing it. So,
yeah, I don't know that I need that speaker either. So I'm not sure that I'm going to be rushing out to buy that Nest Audio, whatever the crap the name of it is, for my house either. I've got googly speakers all over the place and they're fine.
Yep. Yep. But hey, good updates. Good updates.
Yeah, for sure.
Back to Amazon. Amazon had gaming announcements. What's that about?
Right. That is a little weird for us to be going into gaming. And we're not talking about Sony or Microsoft. We're talking about Amazon. So Amazon announced Amazon Luna. It is Amazon's game streaming service. So if you're familiar with Xbox Game Pass, the Project X Cloud portion of Game Pass, or if you're familiar with Google Stadia or NVIDIA GeForce Now, it's similar to all of those. The main thing here is that this is a subscription, you know, all you can eat sort of service, a Netflix style service where you pay one subscription and you get access to stream a bunch of games Right now, that library is over 100 games. So all of the heavy processing is happening up in the cloud. So you can have a pretty weak device to do all of the actual game playing on. It supports Bluetooth controllers. You know, it'll use an Xbox One controller, a Sony DualShock 4 will work here. But they also, like Stadia, have made their own controller, which does connect directly to the cloud and will give you lower latency if you're using it, just like the Stadia controller does. The thing that gets a little bit interesting, I think, is what it's available on. PC and Mac, not surprising. Fire TV, not surprising. Although Google still doesn't have Stadia on Android TV. But it's also on iOS and Android. And how did they do it? They made it a PWA, a progressive web app. They are streaming this through web browser technologies, basically. And that is so smart because Amazon or Apple and Google, like, there's not really much they can do about that because you just go to a web page. And I mean, I don't know how you do it on iOS since I don't have an iOS device, but in Google, there's just an add to home button and it makes a shortcut to a web page. And that's how this works on mobile devices, on iOS and Android.
That is interesting. And you know, the funny thing about that is that originally that is how Steve Jobs sold the iOS devices as, you know, your means for getting apps. You just got them through the web and right. You threw a shortcut on your desktop. And ultimately, people weren't happy with that, which is why we ended up with native applications. But this certainly does get around their limitations, and I'm glad to see that. And you know, it's not a cheat by any means. This is completely legit. Apple has no problem with this kind of thing. So good for them.
Right. Yep. So the cost is kind of important. It's in early access now. You can sign up to get access to it. Well, it's going to be in early access soon. You can sign up to get early access during that period. It's going to cost you $5.99 a month. My guess is once we're past that, it probably goes up to $9.99 a month. Most games currently play at 1080p, 60 frames per second. Some games will play at 4K. And then the other interesting model here with Amazon Luna is that they are going to offer tiers, but the tiers don't work in maybe the same way you would expect. They're doing like partnered tiers. So they're going to have a Ubisoft tier. So you're going to be able to pay for that Ubisoft tier and be able to play Assassin's Creed Valhalla when it comes out this fall and all of the other giant open world Ubisoft games that'll be coming out. So that's an interesting model. Now, you know, you kind of started all of this off with like Amazon and gaming. That's weird. What's Amazon doing in gaming? Well, so it's game streaming. And whenever we talk about these game streaming services, we talk about how to do this well, you really need, as a company doing this, you need two things. You need an excellent cloud infrastructure, because you've got to have data centers all over the place to make sure that the streaming is going to work well. It's going to be low latency. Amazon's clearly got that.
Check.
Right. They are number one in that regard. Number two, Microsoft with Azure. Okay. The other thing that you need, though, ideally, is a history in the gaming space. And that's what Amazon doesn't have. That's what Google doesn't have. Now, on the Google side, they also, I mean, they have cloud infrastructure, but not at the level of Amazon and Microsoft. So Amazon can absolutely make a big play here. And, you know, it's got Twitch integration built right in so that if you're watching someone playing a game that's available on the service, you can click one button and immediately be playing that game. That's cool.
And that really is, I mean, it's not exactly like a gaming service, but that is their real offering that touches the gaming world today.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, that is their one connection to the gaming ecosystem right now. So that's cool. It's not revolutionary. Google Stadia does the same thing with YouTube, but it is cool. So we'll see. I mean, while I don't use these game streaming services very often, it totally makes sense. Like, yeah, I went and dropped $500 to pre-order an Xbox One X last week, but you don't need to, like, if you've got a good internet connection, you can play brand new top tier games anywhere when you can do it on your TV and on your phone.
Right.
That's pretty amazing. So I have a little bit more confidence in Amazon making this work than I do over Google, especially with how bad Google fumbled their launch and they continue to fumble it. So we'll see how this goes. I'm not going to be signing up for it because I never leave my house. I don't leave my house and I've got an Xbox. So I'm not the target market here, but I think they've got pretty good prospects of finding some success here. So we'll see as that becomes available in the coming weeks. All right, that's it for our gaming news. Let's get into what's been going on in our entertainment centers. And Richard's got a fairly long list tonight.
We recorded last week, right?
We did.
How have I watched so much television?
I think because you haven't been painting your freaking house all weekend long.
Yeah, and I think it's because I'm largely caught up on a lot of things, so I'm really just watching the latest episodes. But before we even get into that, I wanted to mention that, you know, last week we talked about how I had this weird problem with my receiver signal not getting to the TV, and I thought it was my receiver, and I replaced the cable, and suddenly everything worked again. It went out again.
What?
And then the next day it was fine.
What? That's not good.
I know. So
that makes it sound like the receiver.
Yeah. So I have no idea what's going on. It's working now. Well, probably not right now because I'm not there at the television and Edward's watching TV. So it's probably broken now.
If it was broken, you would know.
But I mean, it's ridiculous. I don't know what's going on there. So I'm just going to keep my fingers crossed and hope that I don't have to replace that very expensive receiver because I don't want to do that. I also have been watching a bunch of live TV and recording some stuff through channels. We talked about how we now have channels, thanks to the folks behind channels who set us up with licenses so we can talk about it more. And so I've been trying to use it more. And the more that I use it, the more that I like it. The experience has been really good so far. And I started thinking, okay, well, I'll just try and make a conscious effort to watch more here. And now if I turn the TV on or I'm on Apple TV and I want to watch live TV, I'm not even switching to my TiVo. I'm just switching to channels and watching live TV there. So it's really good. Now, I watched a bunch of stuff. Like I said, we have started Doctor Who season 3 and continued into that. I am sticking current with Big Brother All Stars. I watched the latest episode of Lower Decks. I watched the latest episode of The Boys, which keeps on getting darker and darker and continues to be frighteningly relevant. I watched two or three episodes of Snowpiercer. I think I only have two remaining. That season gets so much better as the season goes on. I liked it from the beginning, but I felt like it was a little slow at first, even though it was incredibly violent. It seemed a little slow. And now I'm just really, really loving it and very happy that it's been renewed for a second season. I started Archer season 8, which is, from what I understand, the weirdest of the Archer seasons. Archer actually just started its 11th season, so I'm not as behind as I was before. Continuing through Man in the High Castle, once again, Ted Lasso saved my week last week. So I'm really hoping we get a good, I think it's the finale episode coming up. I really hope we get a good one this Friday because I need it. And last week's was so, so good.
We're getting feedback from show listeners that are loving the show too. So it's definitely not just you. And, yeah. And I think we've got a lot of people who are really happy that you recommended the show.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just phenomenal. I can't recommend it enough. Watched a couple episodes of our cartoon President, which is back in production and sticking up with the current news. So that's interesting. Speaking of current news, my favorite way of watching the current news is Last Week Tonight. And that has started up again from its hiatus. Fargo has started its fourth season. I actually forgot that there was a third season and I watched it all. Fargo season 4 is even further away from North Dakota than any of the others were, from what I can tell, but it is good. I questioned where they were going in the first 15 minutes of this first episode, and by the end, I was totally in. So I am looking forward to this. Watched a couple more One Day at Disney shorts because I needed more happy, and they make me happy. And we watched a couple of movies. So, well, no, we watched one movie. I tried to watch Zombieland. I've heard good things about it. It's supposed to be really funny. We usually like that sort of, not necessarily zombie movies, but, you know, the sort of over-the-top Victorian horror kind of stuff. So I thought, okay, Zombieland, that might be kind of fun. And 5 minutes in, Edward's like, yeah, I can't watch this. Just because, like, too many blown-up heads and stuff like that. And we watched Identity Thief, which is a Melissa McCarthy movie. This movie has such a terrible rating, and we thoroughly enjoyed it. We just thoroughly enjoyed it. So Jason Bateman, who plays his usual, you know, straight, serious comedy, like comedic delivery of stuff, and McCarthy, who's just so good in comic and physical comedy delivery, we really enjoyed it. And that's really the end of the good stuff, because last night, as of the time that we recorded, we didn't record last night, not because Josh was painting his downstairs, but because we wanted to watch the presidential debate, the first presidential debate between Trump and Biden. And we both did. And I don't really have the right words to sum it up. So I am going to quote the CNN news commentator who spoke after on air live and said it was a shit show.
Those were the only words that I could come up with also.
Unbelievable. It was unbelievable.
It was so bad. It was so bad. Like, I watched it from the very beginning. Jen was still putting our kids to bed. She came down about 9:15. I stopped her at the bottom of the stairs and I said, stop. Like, don't sit down. You don't want to watch this. It's already a shit show. You do not want to watch this.
Yeah.
And she did, because, you know, we want to be informed and all that stuff.
Yep.
Oh my gosh.
Oof.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and, you know, I'm not going to get political. We don't need to talk about why, but wow, that was awful.
I mean, it was everybody who was involved made it bad. So you don't even have to be partisan here.
I will
say, it was bad
say,
across the board.
I will say that I felt like Chris Wallace did an amazing job given what he had to work with.
Yeah, you know, I have heard some people being like, that was the worst moderating I've ever, like, I don't know how he could have done much more.
No, I think he did a very good job considering
and
got so close to yelling is the wrong word, but he was at points raising his voice.
Yeah, because it was the only way he could get heard.
It was just insane.
It was so nuts. Yeah, like it was kind of embarrassing. Like being, it was embarrassing.
Okay. All right, but that's it for me. So, did you do anything in your entertainment center that made you happy?
Yes, I watched some hockey, Stanley Cup finals. are over now. The team that I wanted to, well, the of the two teams that were in the finals, the one that I wanted to win did, the Tampa Bay Lightning. I did get to sit down and see the Stanley Cup awarded, which was nice. It looked like Tampa Bay might win. I think that was Saturday night. And it went into double overtime. And I'm like, I have to be up early. I am so tired. But I always want to be there to see the Stanley Cup awarded, but I cannot stay up any longer. So I was really glad that Dallas won that game so that it could come back to a game six, which is where Tampa Bay won it on Monday night. So yeah, Monday night was great. Tuesday night's TV, terrible. And then, but that's it for TV and movie watching for me. I did finish the audiobook that I've been reading, Queen of Shadows. We actually got a listener who tweeted at me and said that Audible was having a deal on the books in the series. So he picked up the first book in the Throne of Glass series, and I'm waiting to hear his impressions of it. This fourth book, Queen of Shadows, it kind of felt like maybe almost like the second movie in the Lord of the Rings. I can never remember the subtitles of the second and third movies. Where, like, the last quarter of the book was just like nonstop action and huge things happening for the plot, and this is four books into a six book series, so that's a lot going on in that small of a section of the book. It was really good. It is absolutely made the previous three books worth it, and there's a couple more to go. So if you like fantasy and action and that sort of stuff, check out the Throne of Glass series of books. Like Richard, I've also set up channels. I got it installed on my Nvidia Shield TV. I'm not going to talk about all the details yet. We're going to talk more about it in a week or two. It's been mostly good, though. I can say that. And like Richard, if I'm going to watch live TV, I'm just turning on my Shield and going to the channels app. Because it's really good. Yep. It's really, really good.
Yep.
So that's it for me. Maybe this week I'll start to get back more into normal things. I don't know. I don't think my house is ever going to be done. I still don't have flooring picked out. So my house is in shambles.
Josh. Good grief.
I didn't think that part would be hard. It's been a friggin' nightmare.
Yeah, decisions like that are always difficult. Hey, before we get out of here, I want to follow up with David. And I'm curious to hear back from David with all of the product news that's come out now. You know, maybe David's a Roku person, and that's the experience he and his household know. And so that's what he's going to go with, and it's going to make the most sense. But honestly, of the things that we saw launched this week, I think the Google Chromecast, if it lives up to everything they discussed, that seems to be the killer device.
It does, but if David's family is all in on Apple,
right? So it right, because there isn't yet an Apple TV Plus app for the Google TV experience.
Right. And you can't do AirPlay to a Chromecast. I mean, you can Chromecast from an iOS device, but I don't know how great and how widely supported Chromecast is on iOS.
Yeah, it is very widely supported, actually. It's not going to be supported from, say, your videos that are in your personal
like videos
library
that you took on your phone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's not going to be supported in music and stuff like that, meaning Apple Music. But third-party apps, almost everyone that I use supports it. So,
okay.
Yeah. I mean, I think the real thing, AirPlay is a fair point, but I think the bigger loss is no access to Apple TV Plus. Again, if that's something that is important to you, and you do get that on Roku.
Right. Yeah. So, I don't know that we made that any easier for him.
No, I wasn't trying to make it easier. Like I said, I want to hear back from him.
Yeah. Yeah. Very, very curious to see where he decides to go there. All right. Well, that's going to do it for this week's show. If you want to get a hold of us, we're on Twitter. Richard is at Richard Gunther. I'm at Josh Pollard. And the website is at DigiMediaZone, D-I-G-I MediaZone, on both Twitter and Instagram. We're on Facebook and the other places to get all of our contact information over at the website, thedigitalmediazone.com. We've got show notes there that has all of our contact information and links to everything that we talked about tonight. If you want to get more details, see what a sound bar looks like that's the size of a carton of eggs, you can do that by clicking the links over at the show notes. And then while you're there, you can also check out our other podcast from Richard. He's got his Home On podcast, and that covers smart home stuff from the DIY perspective. I imagine we've got a new episode coming real soon.
We do. I just recorded this week with Dan Roklowski. He's the home editor from Consumer Reports. And in addition to all of the smart home product news announcements that we went through, we talked about what some of the best products are for smart home, according to Consumer Reports. So it was a great episode, and I think people will enjoy it. I'm hoping to have that out next week.
Awesome. And eventually we're going to get back to recording this show live. We do normally record Tuesday nights around 8:30 p.m. Eastern, unless there's a presidential debate. Although, I don't know, maybe we won't watch those anymore. So,
or maybe they won't have them anymore.
Right. What's the point? Yeah. So that's going to do it for episode 536. He's Richard Gunther, and I'm Josh Pollard. Thanks for listening to Entertainment 2.0. Adios.
Goodbye.